Welcome to the Rethinking Learning Podcast. I'm Barbara Bray. This is where I have conversations with awesome educators, leaders, and change agents about their passion to transform teaching and learning. Guess where I am today? Is it London? I'm in London.
It's in Leicester.
Leicester, in the UK, right?
In the UK, yes.
Yes, I'm here with Kevin McLaughlin. I am so excited because, I mean, we've known each other a long time. And
yes, we have, yes.
It's been really fun. So let me tell everyone a little bit about you first, okay?
Okay.
All right. Kevin, he currently works as a senior lecturer in primary education at Bishop Gostes University, Lincoln. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's right, yes.
Before that, he taught in primary schools for 20 years and also worked as a deputy head teacher in England and Spain. Now, I didn't know that. That's new.
We're going to
talk about that. And Kevin is also a Google Certified Innovator, a Google Certified Trainer, an Apple Distinguished Educator, and a lot more. And he even wrote about some of the things he did in the schools and the learning zones, which we love, for a book. So I decided to reach out to him to discuss. Actually, I want to kind of talk about the state of education. Welcome.
Yes.
Welcome so much, Kevin. I'm so glad you're
Thank
here.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Barbara, and thank you very much for inviting me.
Oh, this is fun. And it's kind of nice. Don't you love technology where we can, you know, be able to connect this way and then share our stories?
Yeah, definitely. I have to say that even over the last 6 months, the improvements that have been made, even in Zoom, for example, is very noticeable. So it's great to see this working so easily, so gracefully, and let's just hope it goes the whole way through.
Oh, it will. We'll make it work. And the other thing, our audience, we only grab the audio, but we get to see each other and it's really fun. And
yes, that's good.
I always find it always works a little bit better when you can actually see the person, and it's nice. So I want to always talk about the person I'm talking to and learn a little bit more about you. So, you know, I know you talked about being an artist, musician, and maybe just tell us a little bit of where you live and your family and what you do.
Right. Well, I'm originally from a city called Derry, which is in Northern Ireland. And I left there in 1996 to pursue my work in education as a teacher. I came to England first. I spent 3 years in England, and then, there's something that you didn't know, I left, did a TEFL course, that's Teaching English as a Foreign Language, and I went to Venezuela for almost a year to work.
I didn't know and that.
I taught English in Venezuela for about a year, and then I got a job in Gran Canaria, in the Canary Islands, that's part of Spain, off the coast of Africa, north coast of Africa. And I worked there for 8 years. I got to a position of deputy head teacher at the school I was working at. And then I decided to return to England to pursue my life in education further, because I was very interested in technology and how to bring technology into my class. I was using it in Spain, but I knew that I would have more opportunities back in England to pursue this. And once in England, it just opened up so many other possibilities. I became a Google certified teacher, educator. I got accepted on the Apple Distinguished Educator Program in 2012, I think it was. And in 2010, actually, just before that, one year into me being back, so being back 1 year, I was Learning Technologist of the Year with an Association of Learning Technology in the UK. So that's me to this date. And of course, I've been working in schools for many years. I was a deputy head teacher again here in England, but now I've decided to cast my net further wide in education and gone into the academic background. And now a senior lecturer at a university in Lincoln called Bishop Gostes University.
Wow. See, I knew you before 2012 when you were working with,
yes.
That's how we met you, with the technology. You put some things up online about your...
That's right.
I think it was their personal journeys called PJs.
PJs, yeah. I got into that quite... I have to say, I did it by accident, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was very interested in how younger children learned. And I spent some time in the early years of my school, that's like kindergarten. And I was watching them, observing them and asking lots of questions. And I took a lot of notes and I went back to my year group, which was at the time, I think it was 9-year-olds. And I decided to try and incorporate an entire philosophy of early years teaching into my more formalized year 5 classroom. And much to my amazement, I found that it worked. And I developed a way to keep on top of all of this in a foundation stage, in that reception early years. Teachers have individual plans for the children so they know what they're doing and can keep on track of what everybody needs and their learning needs. So I used something similar in mine and I just decided to call them PJs, personal journeys, which gave the children in my class an opportunity to develop their own learning, but also make sure that what I had to teach as part of my curriculum was also there in place.
Well, I love the idea because you did have some videos at one point, but I don't know if they're around anymore of them doing.
Unfortunately, the videos had to be removed since I left those schools. So
what a shame, because they were really cute. The kids were so darling and they, you know, they really owned their learning the way you did it.
Yeah, there was one child had 1 year. In that year, she wrote a letter to a local newspaper to proclaim this brilliant teacher, me, just to say that I was doing all these wonderful things and it was the best year of her teaching, of her learning. And she described exactly why. So that was something I cut out because that means a lot more than anything else.
Okay, take a picture of it.
Yes.
We're putting that up on the post because, you know, we put a... Do you still have it?
I will get it. Yes, I still have it.
Oh, it means so much when, especially, you know, the whole reason we do this is for the kids. And yeah. So when they actually say, hey, I like what you're doing, and this is working for me, it just touches your heart. It really makes
a
lot.
Yeah.
So another thing you did was the learning zones. Kind of tell why you did that, and then let's describe them after.
Again, it was based on this early years approach where children are able to walk around the room and choose their learning, and the teacher is acting as a facilitator to guide that learning through, depending on what the child wants to do at that time. But always knowing at the back of their head that I know what you would like to do, but at the same time, I know what I need to do. So there's that, you have to sort of weigh out the pros and cons of everything. But it was great to watch this in operation. So I decided I want to try the same approach in my class. And the only way to do that was just to rethink the whole environment of my room and designate areas of learning so that children knew where these areas were. And then they could use those areas for specific types of learning needs.
So you came up with them. I just have to tell you, I still share the graphic. I was just in Ohio last week. I shared your graphic there.
Oh, goodness, it's still being shared, yeah.
It's not that it's, even though, you know, you did it a long time ago, it's still new to a lot of teachers. Do you want to tell the different zones? Or do you want me to explain? Do you have it there? Or?
Yeah, I've got it up in front. First of all, I had... In the corner of my little graphic, there's a little brown area of a little circle. That's my desk. So I tried to create an environment from that corner. But really, I rarely sat at that table apart from doing the register in the morning and in the afternoon or reading a story, for example. But my first area was number one. It was the discussion and thinking zone where I would... That would be my teaching focus. That's where I want the children to listen to me demonstrating, modeling new concepts, new learning that I wanted them to use through that week. So, for example, Monday morning, every child would be given their PJ, their personal journey, and on that would tell them what I expected them to learn that week, but also give them the opportunity to write down their own ideas for learning that week. So we sat at number one, and when children understood what they had to do, off they went, and they would go into any of the other zones in the classroom. So two was the discovery zone, where they could go to that if they had a little bit of free time or they had completed their work, and they could go to that zone to find other types of learning or to extend their learning further. The 5 was the creation zone, where we had art and making and building, and like a maker zone, I suppose, is what's called now, but before maker zones. And 3 was the show off zone, where children would come and show off their work, that what they had learned, what they had discovered, what they were able to do. And usually beforehand, they didn't have a clue, but now they did. So they couldn't wait to show their work off to lots of people. And then the 4 was where I usually sat. This is the repeat level zone. And I tried to do that like a game, so that I was the big boss at the game and the children had to beat me. And if they couldn't, they would come back to this table so that I could demonstrate how to do something again, to go through their misconceptions and their fears. And off they would go again to try and work things out. And then on the left-hand side was the free movement area, where they literally could walk around into any place with any chair, take a chair from any area, move to another place and come back again. So it was very free flow, and it gave children a lot of creative thinking time as well. They could move around, they could talk to anybody. It was a very useful 6 months, I have to say. Very, very difficult to begin with, very challenging, but once I got it sorted, it was brilliant. It flowed like clockwork.
Well, I tell you, I've shared it. It's in our books. It's,
yes.
Because it was so easy. But you know, I never knew exactly what the repeat level zone was. So I'm glad you shared that.
That was the, it was based on about six months beforehand. I was delving into game-based learning. And I was looking at how to use that approach within my class as well. And I liked the idea that children would always play a game, and they would constantly play the level until they beat the guardian or the monster at the end. And they just enjoyed that. And then it got to the next level and so on. So I thought, right, that's a repeat level zone. They can't quite get past that level. So they come back to me, we do it again, and then off they go to demonstrate that they could get past that level.
You taught at different years also.
Yes.
So did you bring this idea to other years after that?
I brought it into seven-year-olds, and I also tried it with my 5-year-olds.
Wow.
I found the 5-year-olds a little more challenging.
Well, I thought you were working with 5-year-olds in the beginning, but I guess you went back.
I went into a 5-year-old environment, 4 and 5-year-olds, to watch how the teacher taught in that environment. And then I literally just grabbed everything, all the good stuff that I could think could work in an older environment. And then I adapted it to fit in with my way of thinking or my way of teaching. And then this learning zones came about after maybe 2 weeks of trying and seeing what worked, what didn't work. And then I came up with the actual learning zones then at the end, the 5 zones.
Wow. So I'm just thinking, because I tell you, you're famous all over because of this, you know? That and the idea of PJs.
I say, that was you in your book.
I know. Well, to say it, it really helped clarify it. And the I just was in Columbus, Ohio with some teachers. I showed it. And then I mentioned the word PJs, personal journeys. And they all went, that's so cool. And I thought, okay, Kevin, I'm talking to you pretty soon. Can you hear it? You know. So you're making a difference. It's really fun when you come up with something and people, it resonates with them.
Yeah.
It really helps.
It did. It worked really well in the school that I was in. And I just think I was very lucky at that time to have a head teacher of a school who was prepared to let me take that risk and be that innovative in my practice. And she saw the benefits of it.
Yeah, that's the thing that I did want to talk about, and it was being able to take risks. So what, you know, since you were doing that, and that was like 2012, 2013, right? After that, I'm trying to figure the order where you were next.
Right. I was still at the same school then for another 3 years. And then I got appointed as a deputy head at another school after that. And that, unfortunately, wasn't the best move for me.
Oh, well, you had to find out, right?
Yeah, I had to find out, but it wasn't exactly what I thought it was going to be. And then I moved to another school for 6 months as a year three teacher teaching 7-year-olds. Really enjoyed that. But at that time, I wanted to look at a different direction in education and see what was next. I've only been teaching now 20 years. To some people, that's like, oh, just 20 years. And others will say, goodness, 20 years. But sort of in the middle, right? So 20 years of teaching. And I thought I had been training students for a few years, for about 5 years, different students in that time. And I enjoyed that. So I had a look at the possibility of working in a university, teacher training. And then this position as a senior lecturer came up, and I thought, why not? Why not?
Wow. So when did you start that?
I started in September.
Oh, you just started.
Yes. Wow. I'm coming to the end of my first semester.
So what are the courses?
Well, I'm working in the primary education teacher development. So my main subject is computing technology. I also do arts. I do physical education, music. And languages, well, English is an additional language.
Wow. So it's full time.
It's busy, yes. Yeah. But incredibly rewarding in a different way compared to a school and younger children, but rewarding in its own way with older students who are focused on wanting to be those next great teachers.
Oh, that's so wonderful. I know I've taught at the university level, and it's fun when you can work with teachers who are, you know, excited and you know, they're just starting to get, you know, like,
yeah,
immersed in it. Me too. And then they start teaching and then they lose it, and we don't want to lose it. So it is exciting. You know,
it's keeping that spark alive.
Oh, in fact, that's the name of your post, Keeping the Spark Alive. I love that. I do. I love that. And so, one of the things that I was wondering, because we didn't talk about your, you know, being an artist and a musician before.
Yes. Yeah.
Can we, and then how do you bring it in? Let's talk about that first. Like, what did you do before with the art and the music?
Well, before I got into teaching, I went to art school, and I was there for about a year, and I really enjoyed it, but I decided I was offered a place to be a fine artist on a degree, a painting degree in Manchester University. And I turned it down because I thought, I don't need somebody to give me a piece of paper to say I can paint. I was 20, 21. I thought, I don't need that. So I actually went back to Ireland because I was in England doing this. I went back to Ireland and I spent the year painting in a studio. I got an art studio. I did my own paintings and I had my own exhibitions. I sold my work.
Wow.
And at the same time, I got into music and I was a drummer in a band, and that was it. And over the years, I had further opportunities to play in a band. I was a musician when I was in Venezuela. I played guitar and sang in different pubs. And in Spain, I played in different pubs, but I also was in a band as a drummer. And then when I came back here, my drums have been hung up away. They're gone. But the guitar's kept in my classroom so I can use it with the children and teach them to sing and teach them songs and talk. Even use the guitar for teaching science, talking about history and geography. And you can do so many things with the guitar.
I know. Well, it's a universal language.
Exactly.
It really is wonderful. So do you bring that into your university?
My guitar is not made an entrance to university yet, but my students have asked if I could bring it in January. So I said, okay, because I've got two. I've always had one at home and one at school. So I'm going to bring my other guitar back to university and I'll demonstrate what you can do with it. Yeah.
Oh, I just think music is so wonderful. It doesn't matter what age it is. And the teachers need to see how they can bring the world into their classroom. And like with music and art, it's just like
yeah,
everywhere, and it's wonderful. Like,
there was a time, this was back in Spain when technology wasn't, back in 2007, 2008, I was dipping into using, trying to get Google Hangouts to work back then. They weren't great.
We did one, remember?
Yeah, we did. And I tried to get a link up with friends in England at the time, and I was teaching in Spain, and I was going to play guitar in my class. One of the people then on Google Hangout was going to sing. Another one was going to be the drummer, and the other one was going to play the bass, and we were going to join and have a jam. And it didn't work, but the idea was there.
Now you can use Zoom.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, there are people that have done a cappella. There's an a cappella app where you can have you do all sections and then you pull it together. Yeah. So there's the four of you.
I'm going to do that with as an interesting way of teaching music with the students and get them to use some examples like that within their teaching. So I'm looking into that over Christmas.
Oh, well, if I find that app for you, I'll share
it. Yeah, please do.
I think Dean Shoresky? Somebody did it. I can't remember who, but I'll find out because you use technology. So since you're such, you know, let's say Google and Apple, how are you bringing technology into your classes now? What are you doing? Are you expecting them to use technology?
Yeah, well, within my own lectures and seminars that I do, I use Socrative for feedback.
Oh, cool.
I use Kahoot.
Oh, I love
for instant. The students, they love it. But it's so powerful within a university context as well, because it gives me an instant feedback on what they have learned during those seminars, whether they're following my thinking and what they want to challenge their own thinking as well and be more critically thoughtful about what we're talking about. So it's a really useful tool, and I use those type of tools within my seminars.
Oh, I love it. Too bad you're so far away. I'd like to join.
Oh, and Plickers as well.
Oh, really? I don't know Plickers.
Yeah.
It's
almost like a, depending on the number of students you have, so you print out a sort of a little mystery-looking blob, a square shape, which has got it's got A, B, C, D orientation on it. So depending on which way you hold it, that's your answer. So you give the students a question. They have A, B, C, or D, and they choose which one, and they hold up the little shape according to the whichever answer they want. The app, you hold up the phone and scan the room, and you get instant response.
Oh,
and it's so good.
Oh, really? It's like kind of like Kahoot, but in a different way, because
you're holding up, and it's that immediate sort of like the children, my students, they just go wow, and I want them to see that and take that into the class, because that's what happens when they have the children. They see the same effect.
Wow.
But for reasons that will help them with their teaching.
So
it's more to do with that.
So this is teacher education. Is this for
their
certificate or the credential? I don't know what you call it.
This is a degree. So they're doing a degree program for 3 years. And at the end of that, they go for the qualified teacher status.
Wow. That's not what we have in the U.S. Some people even have very little training. So this is nice. So do they actually have like a mentor and do student teaching also? Do you know?
Yes. Yes.
Oh,
so
that's wonderful.
They go into schools and we go in as mentors with them as well. So they help them with teacher training, as well as having their academic and lecturing side at the university.
So where it's in Lincoln?
Yes.
Where is that? Related to London?
North.
North?
Very north. Very north of London.
Is it cold there?
It can be. It can be very cold there at times. It's an absolutely beautiful place. It's got an amazing cathedral. Very old. It's built in the Norman Conquest times in 1080 or 1090, something like that. Or 1000 and whatever it was AD. It's got it's got old Roman ruins around it. It's got a castle at it. It's got very steep streets and cobblestones and beautiful shops and tea rooms. And it's an amazing place.
Oh, Well, you know what? You're going to have to take some pictures so we can put them in the blog so people can, if they can't go to visit, we can at least see it, right?
Yes, of course.
So do you live right there in Lincoln or do you?
No, I'm commuting from where I live in Leicester. So it takes just over an hour for me to drive to the university and an hour back. But I'm not in every day, which is handy. I can work from home as well.
Oh, it sounds like a wonderful job for you. I'm really happy. Yeah. This is, they're so lucky. They don't know how amazing you are. Because what you're so, what I love is all the different, you're eclectic. You have all these different talents and you've tried things and you take risks. And not everybody has those opportunities to do that. So, and you push the envelope a little bit on some things. So, and maybe some people
I
don't like
do,
it,
yes.
right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There have been a few people in my experience who've not liked it, but.
Well, I went through that too. That's why I'm doing this.
There we go.
Yeah. So, you know, you do research-based and evidence-based approaches, and I know you're bringing those into your work too. So you probably expect them to, your teachers to have a portfolio and share and demonstrate evidence?
Absolutely. We want our students to look at the research, the literature, on education practice, but we also want them, what we're doing this year is what we want them to think about this critically and to narrow down what's working and basically look at the things and go, yeah, they don't work. But actually to find out why and what it's causing certain things to creep into schools that don't work, but why we keep falling for these type of tricks and fads and gimmicks. And I know I've fallen for them in my time, but what this research and this literature has given me an opportunity to do is actually to read a lot more, spend time reading, and actually making those informed decisions based on what is or isn't going to work. Or it's not even a case of what's going to work. It's looking at the evidence that's there and making a judgment and an informed judgment on it as well. So it helps.
Oh, I could talk to you all day. I mean, this is a piece that I, you know, when it comes to education, we need to get people to think again, be curious, and be able to even be a little skeptical and ask a lot of questions. And how do we, you know, if we don't do this in teacher education, they'll never do it in their practice. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that you're doing this. This is,
It's been brilliant so far, and I can't wait to get back in January.
Oh, I'm so happy for you because I know that you were searching, and this has turned out just perfect for you. And
this is brilliant. Yeah.
Oh, well. On that note, I have just had the most wonderful conversation with you, and this has
been
really,
great.
Really fun. So we're going to have pictures. We're going to have a whole bunch of things that we're going to put up, and we'll be sharing this. Oh, Kevin, thank you so much.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much, Barbara.
Oh, this has been wonderful. So we're going to definitely have a blog that goes with this, and people are going to love it.
Good stuff. I look forward to reading it.
Well, you're going to help write it.
Oh, right.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning podcast and my conversation with Kevin McLaughlin. So make sure you visit barbarabray.net to learn more about Kevin and learning zones, his teacher education program, how he uses gamification. Oh, I could go on. There's so much. So look for a complimentary blog post with resources and links where you can leave a comment for Kevin. These conversations are all part of a bigger picture to transform education. So I invite you to leave a review on iTunes and share or retweet this post on Twitter using the hashtag Rethink_learning. So please subscribe to the podcast and the website at barbarabray.net so you can join the conversations.